This is the Poetry Magazine podcast for the week of January 30th. I'm producer Curtis Fox with an archival edition of the podcast. We'll be back next week with a new podcast featuring poems from the February 2017 issue. But for this week's podcast, we're featuring two poems by Ocean Vuong from the February 2014 issue. The podcast was hosted by poetry editor Don Scher and assistant editor Lindsay Garbutt, and they were joined by consulting editor Christina Pugh. Here's Don Scher.
This is the first time Ocean Vuong has appeared in poetry. His book Burnings came out in 2010, and last year he won a Pushcart Prize.
We have two of his poems in the February issue. The first one we're going to hear is called Detonation. Ocean Vuong told us that the poem got its start from a letter he tried to write to his father, whom he hadn't seen for quite some time.
It took me a long time staring at this blank page. The whiteness of the page was almost suffocating. And I finally just kept writing the word father. But I wrote it in Vietnamese, and I kept on writing ba, 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 ba. And I started thinking about what that word means to me and how it's always related to Vietnam and Vietnam's history and my tether to that history. And I kept seeing this bright page as a lit bomb. And I was just trying to carve him out of that.
It's worth pointing out that the N in detonation is capitalized. So at first glance, it reads like detonation.
Detonation. There's a joke that ends with, huh? It's the bomb saying, here's your father. Now here is your father inside your lungs. Look how lighter the earth is. Afterward, to even write the word father is to carve a portion of the day out of a bomb bright page. There's enough light to drown in, but never enough to enter the bones and stay. Don't stay here, he said. My boy, broken by the names of flowers. Don't cry anymore. So I ran into the night, my shadow growing toward my father.
That's very lovely. The first line all by itself is a line you become accustomed to seeing, I think, in a lot of poems.
There's a joke that ends with.
There's a joke that ends with. Huh? And then you immediately are given to understand that there is no joke as such in the poem. Not to be too glib, but it's sort of more huh than joke. And it's funny, you know, when I put the issue together, I didn't do this on purpose, but I realize as we're talking about it, that there's a similar illumination in this poem. I mean, the whiteness or light of the page that Hest is obliged to reflect and contain reflections on a real life and a real relationship. And here, the detonation of bombs is a kind of illumination that isn't wisdom. It's a kind of flash that can be very destructive. So this seems very poignant to me in many, many ways.
Yeah, that carving seems very poignant. He speaks about it in his words about the poem, and also that effortful quality to write in English.
To even write the word father is to carve a portion of the day out of a bomb bright page.
The work on the page is connected to a particular, in this case, historically horrific setting.
Yeah. I mean, I think that relates to the title of this poem, the way he capitalized the N in detonation so that you notice the nation in there. Mm-hmm. His sense of belonging is wrapped up in this detonation. And I also really love the ending of this poem.
So I ran into the night, my shadow growing toward my father.
So as he's running away, there's a part of him that is still connected to that past and even lengthening that connection.
Well, and it moves from the light to the darkness without pathology, you know, that it's it's a way of making a relationship. In the lines before the ones you quoted, it's really sort of stunning to me.
"Don't stay here," he said. "My boy, broken by the names of flowers. Don't cry anymore."
That's a hard thing I would have to believe for a father to say to a son and for a son to hear. But I like how it's preserved in the poem, that difficulty, the sort of explosiveness of the relationship is sort of recast into shadows moving towards each other, which redeems that darkness.
Let's hear another poem by Ocean Vuong. This one, Obad with Burning City.
The burning city is Saigon at the end of the Vietnam War.
My grandmother was alive during the fall of Saigon. She was actually in Saigon. And she kept on saying, "The city fell to the snow song." I always heard that as a child. And it wasn't until much later that I researched and found that it was Erlen Berlin's White Christmas.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas.
Saigon fell in April of 1975. And as Vuong explains in an epigraph to this poem, Armed Forces Radio played the song as a code to begin Operation Frequent Wind, the ultimate evacuation of American civilians and Vietnamese refugees by helicopter.
Growing up, I kept on imagining my grandmother in this chaos beneath a blizzard or in the middle of a blizzard. I kept on imagining Vietnam covered in snow. It was a very bizarre, surreal image. And I think this poem was my way of trying to express that.
Here's Obad with Burning City.
Milk flower petals on the street, like pieces of a girl's dress. May your days be merry and bright. He fills a teacup with champagne, brings it to her lips. "Open," he says. She opens. Outside, a soldier spits out his cigarette as footsteps fill the square like stones fallen from the sky. May all your Christmases be white as the traffic guard unstraps his holster, his hand running the hem of her white dress, his black eyes, her black hair, a single candle, their shadows, two wicks. A military truck speeds through the intersection, the sound of children shrieking inside, a bicycle hurled through a store window. When the dust rises, a black dog lies in the road, panting, its hind legs crushed into the shine of a white Christmas. On the nightstand, a sprig of magnolia expands like a secret heard for the first time. The treetops glisten and children listen. The chief of police face down in a pool of Coca-Cola, a palm-sized photo of his father soaking beside his left ear. The song moving through the city like a widow. A white, I'm dreaming of a curtain of snow falling from her shoulders. Snow crackling against the window. Snow shredded with gunfire. Red sky, snow on the tanks rolling over the city walls. A helicopter lifting the living just out of reach, the city so white it is ready for ink. The radio saying, "Run, run, run." Milk flower petals on a black dock, like pieces of a girl's dress. May your days be merry and bright. She is saying something neither of them can hear. The hotel rocks beneath them. the bed a field of ice cracking. "Don't worry," he says, as the first bomb brightens their faces. "My brothers have won the war, and tomorrow the lights go out. I'm dreaming to hear sleigh bells in the snow. In the square below, a nun on fire runs silently toward her God. Open," he says. She opens.
One of the most remarkable things to me about this poem on first reading it was the use of color in it. Obviously, with the repetition of white Christmas, you're going to get that white color over and over with the snow. But there's also an emphasis on black eyes, black hair, black dog, sprigs of magnolia and milk flower, which are white. And even when the chief of police is face down, he's in a pool of Coca-Cola, which is dark. It's not red. And so the only instance of color explicitly mentioned in the poem is red sky, which is almost exactly in the middle of the poem.
Snow shredded with gunfire. Red sky. Snow on the tanks rolling over the city walls.
Well, obviously, too, there's something so bizarre and maybe, you know, cynical about this choice of white Christmas as a code to begin the evacuation in April. As the cliche goes, you couldn't make this stuff up. But so for the poet, the question is what to be made of it. And I think it is a very intense and deftly done performance, I guess, because you can hear that song and you can see these characters panicking. You can see everything sort of escaping from them. In some cases, their lives. And then there's the real escape of people who are able to get out.
A helicopter lifting the living just out of reach. The city so white, it is ready for ink.
That's such a stunning line because that event has become ink. I mean, literally, this poem, the history written about it, starting with news reports of the time all the way to the current moment.
In the square below, a nun on fire runs silently toward her God. Open, he says.
It's a little bit of a stretch, I know, but that's kind of out of Hopkins in a way, or at least it's the same kind of thing, that the terror actually resolves into something else completely unworldly. It's hard to believe that a poet can reach that moment, given all the extremity there. And so Hopkins pulls it off, and I think in this poem, Ocean Vuong pulls that off. It's amazing.
Do you also hear a little bit of pound in here, too?
Milk flower petals on a black dog.
Yeah.
You know, and one thing I liked about that was that milk flower petals on the street, like pieces of a girl's dress, if it occurred on its own in a poem, might be a very, shall we say, benignly lyrical moment. A metaphor is a metaphor. And after everything that's happened in the poem, pieces of a girl's dress are concretized, literalized. Yeah. That milk flower petals on a black dog seems to have this really interesting echo of pounds in a station of the metro. Mm-hmm. You know, the apparition of these faces in the crowd, petals on a wet black bough.
It's interesting that you mention that, because what both those poems do, I mean, that pound poem, it's sort of famous for having been cut down to the couple of lines that it is from a longer poem. And this is sort of the imagist moment where movement, because in Pound's poem, it's people moving, you know, they're moving around, but it's sort of captured in this sort of image, sort of flash frozen into that. Yet the movement is there, and the wetness of the bough always feels fresh. And as it's kind of transformed in, or you could say embedded in this poem, that technique is still the same thing. So that we've all, or I imagine most of us, have seen that footage of people running around and climbing up in the buildings with the helicopters and people trying to, you know, it's all motion. Mm-hmm. It's the panic of motion that stays with us. And in the poem, that movement is everywhere. Mm-hmm. And yet at the same time, it's sort of captured. It's sort of expressed in its essence, the essence of the colors and the sounds and this music playing and the, you know, the violence of it and all. It sort of takes from Pound that ability to eternalize a moment. But here it's not just sort of art for art's sake.
Absolutely
or an
not.
Aesthetic program or a political program. It's a series of human moments that cannot be forgotten.
That was an archival Poetry Magazine podcast from February 2014. You can read Ocean Vuong's poems at poetryfoundation.org. We'll be back next week with a new podcast featuring poems from the February 2017 issue. For the Poetry Magazine podcast, I'm Curtis Fox.